as messed up as they are. Probably more. Yeah, they ought to know that.
I'm going to tell you honestly, when I saw Bill Hamilton's segment interview with you, and you're talking about your relationship with J-Rod and how you communicated with him telepathically, that struck me as incredibly real. And from that point on, I was very interested in what you had to say. Because I said, this man really experienced this. This is not bullshit. This is the real thing. So if you could reiterate kind of how you started working with J-Rod.
Well, he was working with me before I ever knew it. Of course, he was on board, as I understand. I have no memory of him directly, but I mean, as I understand, in 73. He had traveled to 73. And then this is even what I said to Jeff Ransom on the phone. You know, I said, my God, if this doesn't boggle, I mean, it boggles my mind when you think about paradoxes to start with. That he traveled to 73, I was picked up, and then he subsequently traveled back to the 53 time frame, and there was a crash, which means that he was held at S4 in 1973 at the time that I was playing baseball with my grandpa, and that he was also on board the craft, impinging into our time, lifting me up. Prosaically, I mean, it sounds crazy, but, you know, it's a paradox, I guess. I mean, but I actually came into direct contact with him at the end of 1993, start of 94. Yeah, there's something wrong with him. During the entirety of my experience around him, he appeared, the best that I can describe, is off-shifted. Almost like, well, I mean, he was physical. I felt him through the glove. There was matter there with me, but almost like he was a ghost with a body. He didn't belong. He did not belong where he was. Yet, when he would communicate, when he would do the entrainment, they thump you. It's almost acoustically. They thump you. And until they finally come into contact with the brain level waves where they can begin communicating. And it comes in waves. It's almost like the plucks of a dolphin. Comes in waves. And then you feel yourself pulled in. As the entrainment is occurring, that the perception is being pulled into his eyes. Very unwieldy feeling. But then they entrain, bringing you down to relaxed almost to a theta state, like an 8 hertz type theta state, where you're very almost like drowsy, and they tell you, you know, they're not going to hurt you. He did that. He actually said that he would not harm me. When he stepped forward on me when we were doing the old bride's dance, as we nicknamed it, where I was supposed to step forward to him, almost like taking a bride step up the aisle. And then he did the thing back to me, almost jokingly, but it was so unwieldy because he broke the protocol. It's like everything that had been established of trust at that moment, it went to hell. And I got so afraid. There was an animal response in me at that moment, a very, very human animalistic response of get me the hell out of here. And I stepped backward and fell backward onto my back. And that is really what I perceive myself as doing. I said to Jeff, I said, felt like I was a cockroach, you know, lying on my back in there. And he walked up onto me and I heard them yelling, fire the repress. They were going to intumesce him. They were going to hurt him. So that he wouldn't hurt me. And I was trying to yell no, and I'm not even sure to this day if I really yelled no or if it was just in my mind. The stress was that bad at the moment. And he literally walked up onto me and sat on my chest. He didn't knock me over. I mean, there was I think Ron or a couple other people said, "Oh, you know, he knocked you over in the clean sweep." He couldn't knock me over. He was too weak to knock me over. He even if he wasn't given his size, he couldn't have knocked me over.
And how tall was he?
Just a little over 3 feet, hunched down, uh-huh. Almost 4 feet if he was to be extended out lengthwise. If he would be lying on his back and extended out lengthwise, but the malady. The pathologies under which he was suffering caused him to have weakness, change of gait, change of stance, where most of the time he was extremely hunched over forward, and he really couldn't stand up straight. When he would walk, he would wobble and kind of shuffle.
He got on your chest. He walked onto your chest on your chest.
He was actually sitting on my abdomen area, but he was leaning forward with his hands onto my chest, looking down.
So he was communicating at that moment that he wasn't going to hurt you?
Yes, he said, I won't hurt you, BNE. He called me BNE. And that goes to it, Beanie. He broke English up very strangely.
And you heard this in your head, I'm assuming. I heard it in my head, it wasn't out loud.
No, I heard it in my head. In my own introspective voice, but clearly not coming from me. Mm-hmm. You know the sound of yourself when you talk to yourself, self-talk. It's the same sound, except it's the wrong linguistics. It's the wrong wording. You could tell it's not you. And initially, when that happens too, there is from my perspective, initially when it was happening, there was a very panicky feeling. But of course, that initially happened when I was part of the B unit team, when Stephen was still going in to the clean sphere. He looked at me through the clean sphere and spoke to me and said, "I remember," and hello.
Meaning the person who it was, you call, what is his name again? The J-Rod looked at you.
Kaela.
Looked at you. When Steve was in the clean sphere with him, he turned around and looked at you.
Yeah, he turned around and looked at me. I was part of the B unit team to start with. In fact, that was going to be my actual occupation in there, was assisting the chief scientist in going into the clean sphere until he identified me as somebody, I guess, special to him, Kaela, and he wanted me to be the person to go in there. That's why I was promoted ultimately to the working group leader in there, because I didn't have the background, did not have the seniority, and it was not my place. But that's why the promotion happened.
A lot of promotions
happen in the world, I think. But,
to go back to the Peter principle. he went onto your chest. He told you he wasn't going to hurt you. Did they actually zap him then, or did they?
I don't believe so, because I would have felt he began to entrain me immediately and strongly, and he relaxed me. The encephalins, the endorphins were going big time. They entrain on several levels, and they're able to relax you by actually flooding you with natural opiates.
Mm-hmm. Like a runner's high.
Right.
So what happened after that? I'm assuming you got the high that you receive
as you're going through natural death process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you naturally kick out the, you know.
Yeah.
But what happened after that?
After that, I began to sink away from what was going on in the clean sphere, and with the panic that was going on over the radios, because I heard them. We had two separate units, an A unit and a B unit on the radio. They were like separate radio frequencies. And I could push the button and talk independently. But they were stepping over each other, screaming, saying, "Get a secondary unit ready to get me out of there. They were going to enter in to pull me out." And you can't just step in there that quickly. I mean, they've got to suit somebody up, bring them in. And you knew before you were going in there that the J-Rod... we were trained that they were a threat. And
really?
So that we were not supposed to communicate privately with them or anything like that. That we had a certain job to do and we were to get it done. And that was the scientific job of removing the samples and then the studying of the samples for the back engineering. These are the reversing-like chemicals.
The idea was to reverse his... an illness that he and his people have, which is the 52s.
And what we were trying to do initially, jumping off onto the biology a little bit, what we were trying to do is we were trying to actually strip the exterior cytoplasm off from the cells and produce cells which would be independently functioning, then to understand those cells biochemically, genetically, so that those cells could then be re-added as a graft into the J-rod to attempt to ameliorate the neuropathy. That's what one of the stated goals was. Easier said than done. But we were told, though, that if something would go wrong in there, there would be no immediate fix. You weren't a million miles away, but you were several thousand when you were inside there. So you were very alone, even though you had radio communication. It was essentially being isolated on a space shuttle, if you will. And not that easily, easy to get you home. Because they had to do all of the repressurizations of the gantry, bring somebody new in, then get you out, then get you detoxed, the cleansing, the decontamination, and then get you out of there, then get you out of the suit, then give you medical treatment. So we're talking a couple hours. So if something goes wrong in there, and they're potentially able to harm you because of the entrainment, you're dead. And that's, you accepted before you ever accepted going in there. But to a large part, it wasn't, it wasn't bravado on our part saying it's no big thing, but you had to accept that just to work inside the facility. You knew that if there was a contamination, if the alarms started going off, the old joke was get in a straight back chair and lean way over and kiss your goodbye. It was over. Because if the alarm started going off, you were sealed into the facility and they were going to pump the gas in and fire the fuel air device. Boom. That's what the explosive valves were for, the so-called escape tunnels. For you to get out in case there was an emergency, those were blow-off vents. So they could blow off and explode the facility, blow off out of the papoose range, and keep the remainder of the facility intact.
So, but your experience with the J-Rod and the other ones you've met were you afraid for your life at any time?
In other words, I was afraid for my life when he stepped toward me. Absolutely, I was.
At that moment.
But it was a very transient, it was an ephemeral moment. Okay.
How did you...
It passed off very quickly because biochemistry helped me calm down when he entrained me.
How did you feel, though, in your sort of interactions with him? In other words, do you feel that you said you didn't remember knowing him in the original meeting,
no,
in the spaceship, right?
Right.
But he remembered, clearly.
He remembered.
So did you feel that you actually developed a friendship with this being?
Oh, I absolutely did.
And that it grew over time, or did you feel that it was instantly there?
That's a good question. I'll say that I felt a kinship to him all along from the time that he first looked over at me. And that may have been a consequence of me being picked up in the park. That may have been. My trust in what he was saying to me grew over time.
Because I remember asking you that.
Yeah,
I specifically asked you that.
My trust grew over time.
Right.
But there was an extant kinship
uh-huh.
there with him.
Uh-huh.
And I think that may have started because of the pickup in 73. I think, but I'm trying to surmise it. There was a pickup of the jovial nature of our friendship over time, certainly, because I've got kind of a strange sense of humor, and he was able to be friends with that kind of same weird sense of humor, where he would look over at me. He would tell me that what his behavior was, because I couldn't tell when he was happy or when he was sad because of physical characteristics that easily. You can tell fairly quickly with a human being from now if they're happy, if they're smiling at you. But I couldn't tell if that was pain or what it was on his face until he specifically informed me that that's his smile, that's his laugh. As that grew, and my relationship with him grew, I became more attuned to his physical responses as well. And I think that picked our friendship up as well. Because I'm more associating with another human being with the physical reactions as well, you know, in the communication. And they were less so. So that was difficult. That was very difficult until I became attuned, where I became more relaxed into what his physical responses were. When I knew he was laughing after that, then that got me into trouble with the folks in the facility, because I reacted naturally to his physical responses. And so I would smile or whatever over at him, and they would say, "What is transpiring between you two?" I'd hear it come over the radio. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I would out and out lie to them and say nothing, because I was afraid. I had a fear of losing his friendship too, because I wanted to learn more from him. And so I was willing. And these are the same people that, you know, will point a gun at me with very little compunction against it. I was willing to befriend him too, because he was a captive there, as I was feeling too, a captive within Majestic, because I had been brought into a program that I had no clue before what I was being brought into. So I felt kind of trespassed against too.
Mm-hmm. So you had a camaraderie in that sense.
Yeah, we were both prisoners in our own right.
Did you think that he had the ability to protect you?
No. In fact, it was, if anything, it was the other way around. Oh. I was covering for him, and a lot of his anger, because he had anger in him too, and pain, and anger as a result of pain from the samples being removed. I was covering for him by not telling them of the anger, because then they would have followed an operant conditioning protocol that had been set in against him to penalize him. So I was actually protecting him.
So, but did
he... He's a human being, for Christ's sake. I mean, if you get stuck with a needle enough times, you get perturbed. And when you're being treated like crap on top of it, a prisoner is a prisoner.
In what way was he treated like crap, as you put it?
If he wouldn't respond as they told him, they would fire a repress valve and change the pressurization in the clean sphere, causing mild to moderate intumescence, a change of pressure in his skin, because he was of lesser density, physical density, as in weight per volume, that density. And the reason why I'm clarifying that is I've heard a lot of New Agey comments about fourth density and fifth. I don't know about all of that. As in weight per volume type density, he was less dense physically than we were. His bone structure was less dense than we were. So when they would fire the repress valve or they would intumesce him, it would cause him great pain. And I was screaming no, and I think, you know, the time that he stepped up onto me, I think they thought the better of it at the moment, because he was clearly and training me at that moment. So if they would have fired the pressurization at that point, I would have felt the pain that he was feeling. And it
right,
maybe
because
killed
you
I don't know.
You developed from what I understand, you developed, like the movie E.T., you developed the ability to actually feel his pain.
It wasn't even developed. It was immediate.
Oh, it was immediate.
The thing which was developed, and I'm not sure. It may have actually been some sort of a neurological habituation. I'm not certain of that. But the thing which was developed was the inability to disentrain, to break off from him.
Even when you left the clean sphere? In other words, regardless within, of where
within,
you were?
Within a certain range, within, you know, like a 15-meter range from him.
For example, right
I
was, now?
I could...
Right now, no, could no, you no, feel no, his
no,
pain?
No.
If you wanted you to feel it, could you?
No, I don't believe so. I don't believe that they're capable. I mean, you know, we're talking time difference. Mm-hmm. His lack of a physical existence in our reality. And even if we're talking no time difference, we're talking about a linear distance of how far between here and reticulum, good God. No.
He's back at reticulum now.
Yeah. As far as I'm aware. Uh-huh. As far as I'm aware. My stomach is growling. I must be getting hungry.
Right, okay.
As far as I'm aware, that's where he returned to. That's the best information I have. And frankly, from the time that, well, when it happened in 2003, they don't even want to discuss the matter with me because it's a real sore point. I did what I was not supposed to
do. You pushed him through a time hole.
I pushed him into one of the Stargate units. Yeah. Into the gray patch between the posts.
And that was at the end of your relationship with him?
Well, that was the end of it. It's the last time I saw him.
I mean, but...
It was the end of their relationship with him, too, which is why they're so pissed off.
Why were you motivated to push him into
it? He asked me to. He told me he wanted to go home. He wanted to see his son. So I did.
So he was a prisoner, but at some point you were in a position... I'm thinking this was in Egypt. You guys were taken to Egypt?
Yeah, I was flown there.
And so was he.
Yeah, but over a different transport. He was already present by the time of my arrival. There was a communication protocol going on. He was communicating something I was never really told. All I was told was that there was a problem with his communication, and they wanted me to be there to cause him to relax or whatever, to facilitate the discussion. And so they wanted me basically there as a... as an idol of theatry, as an idol of the theater. They wanted me present. They wanted me there as a ruse of kinship with him.
And had you...
And the kinship was no ruse, and that's something that they misinterpreted, I guess, over these years, that I have more of a kinship with a present-day human versus him. And to me, although he was offset, although he appeared different, that he didn't belong, he's still a human being, and a human is a human is a human to me. So I had a true friendship with him. There was a true affection there between the two because he was showing me things from his childhood, and I was showing him things from mine, and we were actually enjoying each other's experience of each other, a friendship. It was a true friendship, and I don't really think that Majestic ever regarded it that way. They feel themselves so damn superior, or that we're superior to them. And maybe it's a reaction, I don't know, maybe I'm rationalizing it, that it's a reaction to the P-45's feeling that we're inferior, the so-called rogues. Feeling of us, maybe it's some sort of a railing against that or a reaction against that, that they developed the attitude. I don't know, but I know that I wasn't superior to him and he wasn't superior to me. Much brighter, but we're still just human beings. And just because somebody is brighter than somebody else, it doesn't mean they're superior.
So I'm just trying to figure out why in Egypt he was there. I'm obviously doing some work with them.
He was there as part of a communication program that they had ongoing after our program, way after, almost a decade.
Almost 10 years later.
Well, I mean, you know, it had ended in 96, and we had some more briefings in 97, but that was about it.
So you're saying that this happened recently, that you pushed him into the Stargate?
It happened at the end of 2003, and... You know, I could tell from the relationship with him that he was being honest with me. Now, again, there have been those that have criticized and said, well, look, this guy is 52,000 years along and evolutionary line, which does not necessarily make him smarter, but certainly not better. I mean, look at the pathology, but that he had the ability, if he was a human being, to lie. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we talked with each other about lying, and the Majestic never knew that. But he told me about things which would be happening in the future, inconsequential, generally inconsequential things. And then there were some very consequential items. But some generally inconsequential things that happened subsequent, which told me not only was he from the future, that he had access to future material, because nobody could have predicted conversations, but that he was being honest with me as well. I could feel his heart. And that's all we can really do. You know, they turned it into a joke on Coast to Coast. The Coast to Coast AM Challenge with Bill Burns and George Norrie. Will you step up to the plate and take this polygraph exam? No, because a polygraph doesn't work. If a polygraph worked, we wouldn't need juries. We judge other people, other human beings, by their honesty, by empirical data and evidence as well, but by their spirit as well. And the spirit that I judged him by was what I was feeling from him, from his heart, from his mind. And I judged him by his relationship with his child, by how he regarded his mother, by all of these things that we choose to regard in the human family to make decisions about each other. The same things. I mean, these common things were still present. So there were very, you know, many, you know, uncommon aspects to their society, to the negating of emotion and the negating of personal names out in society, but still being carried within families. There was a common theme to the human family, which was still extant in his time. And I used that as part of my prudent discernment of him, or God, I hope it was, that he was a good human being.
So you assisted him in going through the Stargate.
I pushed the Segway-type transport set on the stroller. They looked like bell jars almost, over the top of Segway-type strollers, where you could, you know, almost waist height, where the bar was, where you could push it in whatever direction, and it took very little effort to move it. And he asked me to go home.
So you pushed him, and what happened to you when you pushed him?
I pushed forward, then the next feeling was a feeling of numbness. For a brief moment, I thought I really screwed up, maybe killed myself or whatever, because I literally felt numb everywhere. Then I remember a flash of gray, and then I was seated coughing on a block about 20, 30 meters away maybe. And I had people rushing up to me, still over dramatically, actually cocking an automatic firearm at me, screaming at me. And I was grabbed, picked up from the block, and taken over and said, you know, you're under arrest. And I mean, I had committed a violation of the protocols, and you know, I was being threatened with weapons to my head and things like that.
So how did
what did he say to you? And you know, are you a spy? And I mean, you know, they were just acting paranoid. No, I wasn't a spy. I just shoved him into the Stargate, and he went bye-bye. And that's essentially what happened.
How did Majestic react after that to you?
Very angry, including the people with whom I'm the closest, save the one present. Very angry toward me.
And how do they act? How does Majestic act when it's angry? I mean, I guess this gets back to, haven't you been tortured? I mean, isn't this right?
I don't call it torture, aside from the fact that I've been falsely imprisoned. That's torture. I was, for a couple periods of time, put at S4 in level 3 and basically told that's where you are for now.
Level 3 meaning, was it a cell?
No, it was one of the rooms, one of the small suites, if you will, which were originally put in. There's 12 of them in this trident. There's a three groups of four, and I was put in Bay Unit 1 over to the left, and it was essentially, I mean, it contained all the amenities. I could ask for food, got anything I wanted, except for I couldn't leave. There was no freedom. I consider that torture. The other items are acts of unkindness. And acts of unkindness from Majestic can range from everything from psychological unkindness, being rude to you, to being threatening, to being physically harmful. And I have been beaten, I have been slapped, I have been physically restrained, meaning handcuffed, and beaten and slapped. I have been put under lights. Well, hell, I had friends doing that to me. But I had, put under intense lights and while being handcuffed, as in interrogated. I have been told to shut my mouth to the point where two people grabbed me. One shoved me down onto the floor of a garage, and the other one stomped on and broke my hand.
So, and these were the members of Majestic that carried out these attacks?
Yes, in other words, they didn't hire someone? Not the J members. These are operatives.
Operatives.
As in security personnel, yeah.
I see. So not the 1 through 12, but people that work for them.
Oh, no. None of them have laid an unkind hand on me ever. Great affection, if anything. Out of them.
But they were under
orders.
But then
again, one can show great affection to a pet.
Okay, so you were viewed as a pet by some of them, but you were also
mistreated
on their orders?
I'm not saying I was viewed as a pet. I'm saying I don't know what they're truly carrying in their hearts, in their minds. And so there exists a possibility that affection can be granted either honestly or disingenuously. It can be granted person to person on the same level, or as an act of condescending.
Well, let's back up a tiny bit.
Well, Majestic. Yeah, she brought up the name Tenet. George Tenet. Oh, I better watch my mouth.
Mm-hmm. That's why I hit the name.
I just started talking here too much.
I know.
George Tenet was a former director of Central Intelligence for the United States of America. Mm-hmm. Now we're moving on.
Okay. but what you were saying about Majestic has got me interested.
Sorry.
That's okay. You're basically saying that Majestic is operating as independent of the government. Is that correct? Or are they operating under the...
Yes and no. They were set independent of direct presidential authority as far back as the late 40s. However, there's more than one individual who has set as a member of the 12 who are intimately involved with the United States government, to include its highest levels.
Okay, and so those people were
It's time to put the tap dancing shoes on.
Okay, those people were actually ordering you to be, as a result, let's say, of this over, sort of overstepping the line, pushing J-Rod into the Stargate. They were ordering you to be sequestered, to be beaten, or harmed in some way.
By the time that happened, all the beatings happened prior to that. By the time that happened, there was... Basically, they didn't know what to do with me. It took everybody so by surprise. Me too. What I did. They didn't know what to do. And so they really didn't. I mean, you know, I got hauled around there at the site for a while, and I got hauled back here to the U.S. But I was basically, after that, just told to go home. They didn't know what to do.
So is this why you've been released from Majestic, is because of this incident?
No. It was coming near the end of my time, my usefulness, basically. Anyway, aside from being almost an elder statesman with them, because I'd been around for like 20 years. My physical condition has gotten worse, not well, physically. So I would not be of any use inside of a laboratory.
Okay, but why is there... I understand that there's been some kind of adjournment.
There has been.
And now there's a new body, and it's not going to be comprised of the same people as the old body.
True.
So why? Why have they changed members? What's the motivation?
There's a switchover between two secret societies going on. One is handing reins over to the other, and it has been long planned. However, it's not been long known by me, but it's been long, long planned, probably decades. I'm certain it has to have been for decades.
So Majestic is ruled by a secret society, is what you're saying.
Well, Majestic has been the most famous, next to probably the Freemasons, secret society of itself. And there are many of the Freemasons who inhabit the Majestic as a consequence of their relationships. The two things are happening at the same time. And so their philosophies then, the philosophies of these associated secret societies like the Scottish Rite and the York Rite, are then imparted into the secret society known as the Majestic.
So what's the quarrel between...
Because you bring who you are to wherever you are.
Sure. But what's the quarrel between, say, the Majestic Society or group and the Illuminati?
That is a real good, and it's the best question to be asked. Even more importantly than the differences between the J-Rods, because this impacts us, I think, now. Many members of the upper echelon, and I don't mean the hard-working people who work on construction sites, for God's sakes, but many people who are in the upper echelon of the Masonic movement, both York and Scottish Rite, have accepted a philosophy which is Luciferian in context and history. Many of the people who are not directly then involved with the Majestic, who are also associated with that Luciferian philosophy, have rubbed up against each other for decades, probably even longer. So, somewhere along the line in history, there was a schism between those individuals who have accepted a Luciferian history, Luciferian philosophy, mixed with other secret society people who have not, that ended up in the Majestic, and people who have accepted a Luciferian, almost like a different denomination, if you will, accepted a Luciferian philosophy. Who are not associated with the Majestic. In other words, we've got dirty coins on both sides.
Okay. And when you say a Luciferian now, philosophy...
Meaning a materialistic, and for lack of a better term, when it comes to the actual European Illuminati, satanic philosophy, where they've given their lives, their families, their sacred honor to this satanic thought of creating a world order under the person that they consider the true God, which would be a Luciferian figure. Now, these people have also, separating them from the dirty coins in the majestic side, these people have also been accepting of the influence of the P-45 rogues, who want to justify their own history by our demise of moving from timeline one over to timeline two, a catastrophe. And so the differences between the majestic group, some of which there have been these Luciferians mixed in, and the true Illuminati group, and they're not even really true Illuminati. I mean, that's a word that comes back meaning enlightened ones. And these people are not enlightened. They're simply under the influence of a false light. That the differences between the two then have raised itself to rancor, even though they share much in common with each other. However, on the majestic side, you have a lot of God-fearing people too. A lot, and I'm not talking about specifically here the 12. I'm talking about the line people, the people that we've worked with. Good people to the bone, to the soul, who want nothing but good for the world.
So, basically, what you're talking about is there seems to be an alliance between, for lack of a better word, the so-called Illuminati group that is satanic followers, and the P-45s, what you call the P-45s, and the Majestic group, which, even though it has some members from the Illuminati, basically is siding with the P-52s.
Yeah, I wouldn't really call them some. I would say that they are Freemasons who have accepted the Luciferian influence. In other words, I personally disagree with it. Mm-hmm. The Luciferian influence, but are still acting as good people.
For the benefit of humanity.
For the benefit of humanity, exactly. And then there are some that I have interacted with who are involved with the so-called true Illuminati in Europe, that are God-fearing people too. There's dirty coins and there's polished coins on both sides. However, the dirty coins make up the vast majority of the group on the European Illuminati side.
Okay. So what is... Now let's get to the timelines and explain just briefly, since this gets over into the future and 2012, what... The P-45s, meaning they are from the future, 45,000 years ahead of...
45,000 years ahead on a separate timeline than what we are presently on, but a timeline that we could transition over to from where we are now. So, if we are to accept that we transition, God forbid, from timeline 1 to timeline 2, they would be considered 45,000 years and 52,000 years, respectively, ahead of us. The individuals who dumped near Roswell, New Mexico, back in the 40s, were approximately 24,000 years ahead of us in timeline 2. And that was a mission return, an Earth-to-Earth time travel mission.
We're on timeline 1, I'm assuming you're saying. And we're headed for 2012, and theoretically, a catastrophe that may or may not happen.
Right around now, yeah.
Right around now. Yeah. And this catastrophe, has this got anything to do with Planet X?
I don't know. There is the most honest answer I can provide you. I know of a lot of lore about a rogue planet coming in. However, the material that I've actually seen on a repetitive crossing, if you will, of Earth with catastrophic influences happens not only because of a matter of physics, of rogue, and I don't mean this toward like J-Rod Rogue, but rogue crossings near Earth asteroids or comets. What I have heard is that to precipitate the catastrophe, there would be, as we pass into the plane of the Milky Way, some sort of energetic burst through the plane of the galaxy by virtue of wormholes that are traveling, that travel through the plane of the galaxy from the center of the galaxy, which have been depicted in ancient lore called the serpent rope, even of the ancients. And that the serpent rope would return at the time of the end of the Mayan calendar, revealing, and there are several perspectives as to what it will reveal. But that during this same time, the history of the J-Rods record that this burst will cause a disruption in the sun, and that concomitantly with energetic bursts from the sun and from the wormholes which would be passing through our planet, that there would be a disaster provoked by virtue of these time travel devices, the Stargate devices, and the time viewing devices, the looking glass devices, spontaneously turning on and directing an inappropriate amount of energy into the crust of the Earth, precipitating a geophysical disaster. This geophysical disaster, in accordance with the history of the J-Rods, the Orions, record that over 4,157,000,000 die over a several-year period by virtue of a geophysical shift in the crust.
So this is what
I can't, is trying I to be numb when I think of numbers that way.
Is trying to be prevented. Is yes. this right?
Yes.
And how is it going to be prevented?
By the disabling and the destruction of such technology that we will naturally then pass through this serpent ropes. The bursts will occur, whatever that means. I haven't physically seen it. But the bursts will occur, and there would be an imparting of energy to our planet that will gradually, naturally, cause changes in the human species and the life on our planet. And that these changes would be positive changes to our people. And I frankly think that it's already happening. There's a rise worldwide and I don't think it's just given the size of the population increase. But there is a rise in very spiritual, talented people. There is a rise in savants, the Indigo Children. It's definitely, from what I've seen from reading about them, a real phenomenon. These children are of a new time, and I think they're of the time one, timeline time. We're seeing, I think, in these children, these great kids, an expression of what we will be in our own future, our next kind of step ahead. You know, not looking millions of years ahead or anything like that, but our next step ahead. And it's a wonderful rise in consciousness that I think will precipitate the next renaissance for our people. I see it happening. The numbers that we received before the Looking Glass was shut down, disbanded, was that there would be a 19% probability with an 85% confidence that the disaster would occur
that there would be a transition from timeline one to timeline two. But that then means that there is an 81% chance that it won't. And so the individuals who want to carry the negative, I'm convinced that it's going to occur, are not presenting the facts. The facts are, this is the material that we have available that we know.
So what you're saying is the Illuminati, to get back to that thread,
yes,
is basically the side that believes that the transition is going to occur from one timeline to the other.
Not only do they believe that it will occur, they want to provoke it.
But how does it benefit them to provoke it? Why should they want to be P-45s?
They don't. The living ones don't. They're looking at the P-45s as a means to an end for them. They're not going to live that long. They're just going to live a normal human life and die. So they want the control for themselves. The fact that the P-45s, that's how immoral these people are. The fact that the P-45s are wanting us to, at their stage in their own development, have a disaster which justifies their own history, is being used as a means to an end by the Illuminati, who would like to see that the population is culled so that they can gain greater control. They don't care.
So, okay, so
they just
what...
want for themselves. There are really human beings that don't care, or that care that little.
So what you're saying is the Illuminati want the catastrophe to occur.
Yes.
So that a certain number, three quarters is the number I've heard, of humanity dies. They
well,
get the Earth
history
to
reads
themselves.
About a little over two-thirds. That's what the history of the J-Rods actually read.
All right, two-thirds. And then what? I mean, they've still had to live through Earth changes and cataclysms, right?
Right. But these people are also the ones who have their guaranteed positions in the safety zones, underground facilities, etc. And so they are presumed. It is not known for certain that they are presumed to actually then be the progenitors, if you will, of the people who become the J-Rods.
Understand. But in a sense... there is a thought that, in a sense, the P-45s, that side of humanity, is possibly becomes almost soulless.
They become repressed. They still have their same souls, because even after 7,000 more years of development, I could see the soul, I mean, as you see the heart of another human being, I could see the soul in Kylet Kaela. So, it didn't...
But Kaela was not
back.
A P-45.
No, he was a P-52. But that just means that he was 7,000 years along the T2 timeline from when the P-45s
so
were
in
existence.
So he used to be, or his people used to be a P-45.
Yes.
And a P-46, his, 47, 48.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes. So the soul didn't go away and then come back. It's been there. But then, you know what? Look, you can say that some people are soulless. The Nazis. How much soul did they have when they threw my grandpa onto a car? How much soul did they have? Well, you know what? They had a human soul. As black as apparently what it was, or as covered over in their demented brains. But I still pray for them that they've, even them, that they've been made whole with God. But they still had their souls, even though it was repressed.
So,
in like manner, the P-45s have a soul.
Okay. Well, then, what... Okay, you've talked about the P-52 Orions and the P-52 J-Rods. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what causes the split? Because the Orions, I'm thinking, are the blonde Nordics.
They're the ones that prefer to stay out of the safety zones when it happens. They're the survivors who do not go underground.
Are these good? Is this a good division of humanity? I mean, the P-52 Orion Nordics.
I don't consider
Nordics.
Any division of humanity good. I consider them the more positive of the two, because I consider the positive aspects of humanity to be the spiritual aspects.
So you're saying the Nordic line is spiritual?
Yeah,
more
extremely,
spiritual.
Extremely. Yeah.
Okay. So how does the Nordic line? I mean, you say they stay out.
They actually move off from Earth first. The J-Rods, or the precursors to the J-Rods, stay on Earth for a great deal of time. Well after 24,000 years from the time of the transition, like 24,000 years from now, because they were 24 or so thousand years ahead of us when they crashed in Roswell in 1947. Those were 24s. They stay. The Orions move off first to the place after the reestablishment of a society on the surface of the Earth. Technology is refurbished, etc. They move off to the place where the Ark is held.
Which is where?
Our nearest body, the Moon.
The Moon.
Where on it, I'm not going to say.
Okay. Well,
because
this gets
I'm having
into...
to defend against the possibility of Timeline 1 transitioning over to Timeline 2 in a manner different than I've been told. And I'm not going to be the person who hands off the wrong information.
So, okay, but you're saying the Nordics are going to get off Earth if the catastrophe happens, or regardless?
They leave after.
After the catastrophe happens.
Presumably several thousand years after it happens.
Several thousand years.
Yes,
oh, I was getting the impression you were talking about them going on spaceships or something.
No. They move off to the Moon several thousand years via spacecraft. They get to the place where the Ark was held. And they reestablish a new community. From there, they move to Mars. From Mars out to Orion.
So,
we're talking a lot of time here.
The face on Mars is this? This are we looking at something that was left behind by the Nordics?
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking
as best
forward.
As I know.
We're looking forward to our future when
we're looking at
the ruins.
Yeah, we're looking at a paradox of their ruins, which they left. On another planet.
In our future.
In our future.
In our possible future.
Yep.
Okay, well, to come back to this future...
She's actually got the best command of this information of anyone in the public with whom I've spoken.
I know.
Thank you. That's a very sweet thing to say.
It's honest.
Thank you. We've got I'm getting another question here from our small audience, and I must say that... That Bill Ryan is... Bill Ryan is also sitting with me and listening to this amazing information and asking some good questions.
When we're looking at Mars, are we there looking at the future?
Now, the question is this.
I just don't understand that.
The question of the day is that what is going to happen? What is going to happen when the transition occurs and we either continue on one... Or, God forbid, number two happens. If number two happens, we're not going to be worried about Mars. We will have much more important things to worry about at that moment. Let's say, God willing, and I think we will, remain on Timeline 1. What's going to happen with our imagery of Mars? I think we'll probably remember taking images of these anomalous structures. And there have been some anomalous structures imaged on the Moon as well. So I think we're probably going to remember that. At least I think so. If we don't, it's not going to matter now, is it?
So what you're saying is we're going to go back to the idea that we never, that there is no face on Mars.
Or there will be a face on Mars, and it will be presented to us at that moment as something different. Maybe the bricks will turn to rocks. And we will get there and find out that all of these beautiful ruins, including the scorpion. If you don't think it's a scorpion, tell me what it is. Okay, I'll show you the images from Star City on the top of this pyramid. If it's not a scorpion, tell me what it is. But perhaps we're going to get there and we're going to find out that all of this presumed architecture that we are seeing by virtue of the geometry that we're attempting to apply to these images is nothing more than rocks. That we've never been there. because at that moment, because we had not transited over to Timeline 2, that we have never visited there until we finally put, quote-unquote, man on Mars.
But there's a profound paradox here. Because
there is.
Because what I hear you saying is that we're looking through telescopes where we're receiving light in present time with a few minutes difference
being
reflected off objects on the surface of Mars, but we're actually looking at a possible future.
That's right.
I don't understand.
There are impacts into our timeline now which have occurred. This is information that I received not only from Kaela, but also from the material within Majestic. There are impacts into our reality now, our timeline now, by virtue of the amount of time travel which has occurred. Every time they have gone back in time, they have caused small paradoxes which have built up as our reality that we now perceive. In other words, there is actual Newtonian superimposing. And that is a frightening thing to me.
So it's almost like putting money in the bank, though, every time they come from the P-45s, in a sense. Their timeline becomes...
As creating a larger heap of manure.
Well, okay, but emphasis appreciated. However, nonetheless, it is like a deposit towards the actual occurrence happening.
I don't know.
They are agents of change, in a sense.
They are agents of change, as all human beings are agents of change. But I don't know whether there is a cause-effect, whether there's a nexus between cause and effect having to do with their amount of time travel and the superimposition which is going on in our reality and the disaster itself. I think that the disaster itself, from everything that I've read and heard, is a direct consequence of the technological aspect of bringing too much energy toward us in a non-natural manner.
Okay, well, basically, you're saying there's two timelines. I mean, I'm sure you're aware of the work of physicists now that are saying, look, if you can have two timelines, you can have 2 million.
Well, don't we really have three or four? I'm discussing 24,000s. I'm discussing 45,000s, 52,000s, and present day. How many timelines are that? Because these people moved ahead linearly in their timeline. Just because we want to call it timeline 2 doesn't mean that there are other effects or super imposings which are occurring on different realities during even their own timelines.
Exactly. I mean, there's a sense at which what you're talking about is not so much that the P-45s, for example, timeline won't exist, as it will actually separate from our reality and become more like a parallel reality instead of an intersecting one.
From what I understand, the people who were just prior, which would be us, according to their history, to the people who were just after, exist as a straight vector of time. So in other words, God forbid the catastrophe occur, it will just appear as tomorrow, the catastrophe occurs, etc., etc., and we move forward, and changes start occurring in the Earth. There is a disaster, there is a loss of huge life, etc. We won't probably feel anything change, aside from the fact that we'll all be running scared for our lives. Aside from that, I have no explanation.
Okay, you're saying if the catastrophe occurs.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't occur, there's still the element in which we have been visited by a timeline in which really does exist in a sense.
And
how do you unmake something which has been made? That's kind of, I mean, it's more of a philosophical question.
I don't know, and all I can do is defer to the Creator on that issue. Because all we do is perturb.
What has told you that this is true?
All of the above.
Okay.
It's all of the above, plus information directly from Majestic, I think.
Why is Majestic in a place to know that this actually happens or doesn't happen? In other words, you've got the looking glass technology that they use, and you use, and you're instrumental in discovering...
Personally.
Were you in?
No. This is an original technology which was derived from ancient cylinder seals by people from our future who provided it to us, meaning the rogues, the P-45s.
Okay, the people from our negative future.
That's right. We wouldn't have this lovely technology if it wasn't planted in our past for us to use now. The entirety of the technology must either be disabled or destroyed.
In other words, to unmake the technology.
Until at least after we pass through this time period. There is no way from the deceit, the conceit, the avarice, and the greed that I have been around over the last 20 years amongst the good side of these two dirty coins. There is no way that they're not going to start this equipment back up again if it's usable after this. Of course they're going to. Come on. I mean, they've got this, it's like a magic box to try to see into the future. What they're going to do with our future with regard to that, I've got no clue. I have no power over it, and I have no clue.
Okay, so this looking glass technology comes from cylinder seals.
Originally, yes.
How?
Originally, it was a series of instructions for accessing the wormholes, which naturally pass in the hyperspace in which we find ourselves. And from there, they worked on the technology. They built the equipment from the instructions. After building the equipment from the instructions, they began to tweak it and find different things out about it. One of the things that they found is that they could actually use it as a peering portal, like a peering glass, if you will, to see different aspects of not only the future, but the past.
Are these Sumerian?
I would say that they slightly predate Sumerian time frame, but that some of the information which came down from cylinder seals that slightly predated the Sumerian time frame were then recopied in Sumerian seals as well.
And
those cylinder seals, oh yes, and those cylinder seals, to the best of my knowledge, have all been obtained.
From Iraq?
Some of them from Iraq, yes.
Some
of them from Egypt. Some of them from other countries where they were being stored.
And
I really don't want to get my country into too many problems here.
And you've got... go ahead.
For a second, it's I want to reiterate, the rogue P-45s jumped back, seeded this technology, mm-hmm. because... that's what they wanted to do, was to seed the land to help facilitate the catastrophe. Because by placing this technology available, they knew that it would be utilized. And as long as we as people... oh, my God. they wanted to go back and seed the technology because they felt that... as people, we would be unable to break ourselves away from using that technology.
How is it that this technology is being utilized now? And isn't, if you're talking about a wormhole, isn't it the same thing as a Stargate?
Essentially, yes. The technology is not being utilized now. Anywhere we find it, we take it.
Who's we? Because you have warring factions, you've got the Illuminati on one hand, you've got the Majestic on another.
We as the United States is part of the UN. NATO, I don't really want to comment too much about NATO and who's controlling the NATO alliance at this point. But
isn't it a fact that the Illuminati would be stealing back this looking? I mean, if they want it to happen, they their objective would be to steal these cylinders and get them on, you know, so mm-hmm. that they could use the looking glass
technology. Yes, but they can't show up as an aggressor to steal anything back. So what they do is they vote against us.
How does that stop looking glass technology?
It plays out in the UN. Well, we had looking glass technology actual Stargate technology in Iraq as late as the start of 2003. And a lot of countries didn't want us to enter Iraq. We did, though, didn't we?
Right. But how is it that, in other words, it sounds like...
Omar just handed his two over. We just told him that we were going to make him rich beyond avarice. And he was a little smarter than Saddam, that's all. And so what he did is he handed them over and says, oh, please, come into my country. He says, look at my equipment to make sure that I'm not making any weapons of mass destruction. Meanwhile, out the back door goes the two that Saddam actually had transferred over to him.
Cylinders.
Equipment. Stargate. Activating technology. Portal. Yeah, for them to experiment with. They were experimenting.
But if a looking glass technology is the same thing, is access as a wormhole? The technology accesses
the
worm.
Yes.
It also accesses stargates.
Well, that's essentially the same thing. I've been using the term stargate
technology
as meaning a machine that accesses a wormhole by spreading out the energy, the strange matter, or whatever it is, and I'm not a physicist, that spreads it out in a compatible way to either communicate through it or the passage of information. And that includes also
It occurs naturally. Stargates occur naturally.
Indeed, they do.
So how do you close those?
You don't, and we don't want to. We don't want to. The history reads that the natural passage of us through this energetic space is a good thing. But it's our use of technology which provokes the catastrophe.
So it's
our enhancement of this natural system, inappropriate enhancement, which provokes the catastrophe. And so, no, we don't want that to happen. I think that the energetics that we're passing through is part of what's happening to us naturally that's changing us in a positive way. It's part of the loving cosmos that we're part of. I think that's probably one of the factors, not all, but one of the factors for the rise of these beautiful children, the indigo children. And I'm all for it.
So we want to leave the stargates, the natural stargates, they are leaving those alone.
Right. We want to keep our hands up from nature. Pull our hands away. Get it away from the fruit of the tree of life, so to speak. Get it away and just let nature happen during this time. That will be a good thing. However, we also have people who oppose that because they want what they want.